Are you ready, kids?
Aye, aye, Captain!
Look at me, sure. I'm the captain now.
Welcome to the Supercoach Co-Captains Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Supercoach Co-Captains 2025 pre-season edition. For everyone listening, this is actually my second tape because I've already fucked up the first one. But anyway, I'm one of your hosts, Dano. Paddo is actually out at the moment. Basically, his injury would be listed down as fatherly duty. So he's a new dad, but we've got someone who can really fill his massive boots. And that is none other than Peter from Nerds for Life Supercoach, basically the MVP, the Brownlow medalist of preseason with stats and all this sort of shit. So welcome, Pete.
It's where preseason's where premierships are won, right?
Oh, bloody right. Oath. Bloody
thanks
oath.
Thanks for having me. And congrats to Paddo as well, of course. I'm eager to be involved and talk some Supercoach just before the season starts.
Yep. And just a little bit on yourself. Basically, explain who you are for anyone that didn't hear you when you actually guest appeared last season with us and what you've been doing all this preseason.
Yeah, so I've been keeping an eye around the grounds for all the match simulations. So every team's match simulation, I've got someone that's watching, sending me their notes, sending me which positions players are playing in, you know, positional changes, structures, or who's doing well, who's not doing so great. And I'll be posting, I have been posting those for the last few months, and that's on X, Facebook, Instagram. What else am I on? I'm on YouTube. I'm on TikTok. I'm on all those places. So it's Nerds, the number 4, Life SC. That's how you find me because it's Nerds for Life Supercoach. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. That's it, yeah.
And I will say for anyone using Pete's content, please actually like physically tag him in Twitter shit and whatnot, because he's looking at you, Harold Sun. Your guys have been guilty of this shit, posting his pictures and whatnot. Luckily, Pete's put up the top left of his screenshots, his little Twitter handle and whatnot. So that's still in the images. But yeah, just tag the motherfucker. Anyway.
I've had a couple of people that I have left some smart ass comments on and they have all messaged me and apologized and have since been pretty good, actually, since that point. But there's always a first time.
Yep. Anyway, this first preseason edition is all about the forward line, Pete. And what we're going to do is we're going to start off with primos. We'll head into basically mid-prices/PODs. We'll discuss different options and whatnot, and then we'll head into the rookies to finish it off, or some of them aren't really rookies, but they're rookie priced. So to kick us off, we'll start off with the first of our 4 primo forwards that we're going to discuss, and that is none other than the horny one, Jason Horn Francis, priced at 537K. He's DPP with midfield status, and fuck, I wish he was DPP last year when I had him. But basically, preseason watch, he's in pretty much every CBA. I think he's... all stoppages and whatnot. Pete, is that right in that he hasn't really spent any time forward this preseason?
The early match simulations, he did spend a little bit of time forward, but the last two, he definitely has not. He has spent 100% of his time in the midfield. The only thing that concerns me is that the Port Adelaide have not had a solid A or B team like some other teams have had, where, you know, like West Coast, for example, had a and North Melbourne, they have an A team and they have a B team where the A team just beats down on them, right?
Yeah.
Port Adelaide have had a decent mix. So that means that they've had a pretty decent combination of midfielders where guys like Butters and Rosie aren't on the same team, for example, right? And then you've got Jason Horn Francis with Butters, for example. The thing that concerns me is that, and this is what we need to see when it comes to the official practice matches, is will Horn Francis be, and will he be a midfielder only come a game where Port Adelaide have one side and not two sides? You know what I mean? That's the thing that's bothering me. Obviously, if he does, great, I'm in. He's probably one of the first players I brought in when Team Picker was released. But I don't know. I just got to see it with one Port Adelaide side. And if he's got that kind of role, I'm sold.
Yeah, and you know the funny thing is, I'm sold either way because as an owner last year, hoping that he'd get DPP and he was stuck in my midfield, there was actually a time where I'm like, fuck, this prick is doing nothing in the middle. And then he shifted forward and got 55, 60 points in the matter of a space of like 5-10 minutes. And he just kicked some snags, got some contested marks and whatnot when he pushed forward. So I'm good either way with the prick because honestly, with the forward line primos, there's not much going on for me. And we'll discuss the other three in a second. So that's where I'm landing. I reckon he's the biggest lock up forward besides some of the other ones that we're going to talk about.
So I think that definitely he's the safest pick, 100%. He's probably got the most upside, but I just don't see him getting too. So the thing is, you could fade him. And hear me out. This is why you could fade him.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And it's because, do you honestly think he's going to get that much more expensive, right? If anything, you might get him for slightly cheaper. Like last year was his best year by far, right? Now, yes, he's only played 3 AFL seasons and one of them was at North Melbourne when they were next to non-AFL worthy. Horne Francis, he's had a pretty good run last season. There was a four-game period between round 9 and 12 where he went 128, 117, 100 and 110, right? He had a really good, you know, leading up to the bye, he had a really good 4 games. But before that, he was getting a bunch of 80s and 90s. It was okay. It wasn't anything too impressive. Then he backs up with a couple of average scores, then goes good against St Kilda, and then a few more average scores, like an 87, 46, 78. It's pretty gross, right, when it comes to Supercoach-wise. He did have a season high of 141 against Melbourne, but that was in round 22, and Melbourne had no players left and had basically given up. I just my concern is that his low games are 46 against the Suns, right? His ceiling games are great, but I don't know what it is. Like last year, I'm looking at his games. He's only turned up 1, 2, 6, 8. He's only turned up 7 times. It's not that great. Like if you look at it that way, it's just not that great. So I don't know. I think that he's in for a big year. I think that he'll average about 105, but he's priced at 99. So even if he averages 105, he's only going to go up 20K. So you could still get him later if you've got your eyes on other guys, which I actually think the players we're about to talk about next, there's more value. And if one of those guys pop off, they're going to be paying 100, maybe 200K more for those guys, right? Well, Horne Francis, the max you're probably going to pay is an extra 50K for him. So I don't know. Let's just talk about these other guys because I think that they're tempting me that little bit more.
I just want to correct you. He actually turned up 9 times last season, not 7.
Terrible at math then.
There's that. The other side of it is I just want to point out, he's doing the natural progression of the danger model. And that's the other side of it that I want to look at. So he's gone 63.4, 77.6. 99.7, he's going to crack the 100 mark. And honestly, I reckon that's the safest pick that you'll have in your forward line, for me personally. Anyway, that we'll move sense. On to the other guys. So the next one, and this is where I'm actually not liking him, it's Dylan Moore at 527K. So at 527K, I'm avoiding the fuck out of Dylan Moore because he's one of the biggest yo-yo players. Like when he's on, he's fucking on. But when he's off, he's bad and it will be that 1 to 2 bad game spurt where his price will plummet again. Like I think last year you got him in the 400K range at one stage. So for that reason, I'm avoiding Dylan Moore. And the other side of it is because of these other guys that we're going to talk about in a little bit.
I just want to give you a 4-game, like I'm just going to rattle out 4 numbers. And I agree with you. And I'm just going to rattle out 4 numbers. Okay. So this is between round 1 and 4. 104 against the Bombers, went nuts. Great, fantastic, awesome. Anyone that started him, good work. 44 against Melbourne in round 2.
Yep.
And then a 59 against the Cats. And then a 98 and then a 56. Like, not great. That's when you're saying he dumped about 70K in the first like month of footy and yep. You could have got him at 422K. At his cheapest, which is like 100K cheaper than what he is now. And I can see that happening again. But then, you know, when he's on, he went, where was his biggest score? His biggest score was 140 against the Dogs.
His biggest score was 169.
What is that? Oh, it is. No, it's down a little bit lower, 169 against the Crows. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So he can pop off, but it's that yo-yoing for me that when we look a little bit later in, and it sounds bad, the mid prices is where I'd be leaning more towards because I think we're going to get a lot more consistency out of them.
Yeah, I agree. And he's got a pretty tough matchups for the first six games, actually. Essendon, no, but then he's got Carlton, GWS, Port Adelaide, and Geelong. So, yeah, no for me.
Yeah. Move on to one that piques my interest a bit, but I'm still not quite sure on Isaac Rankin at 522K. So, again, he's touted for more midfield minutes. Best season was last season with 500-plus scores in 15 games. So, fucking good. A third of his games are over 100-plus, but still, you want a bit more consistency out of that. And in that sense, he's likely to drop in price at some stage like Dylan Moore. But, and here's the thing, we're seeing a little bit of a different makeup again in Adelaide. They need to try new things. And because, like, I don't know why Adelaide aren't being talked about a lot more, but, like, everyone's focused on Essendon not making finals. It's been a while for Adelaide. What was the last one? Was it 2017 against Richmond? Was their last finals appearance, or was it 2018?
No, I don't think they made finals the following year. I think the drop-off was quite quick.
Yeah.
I'm going to check this out.
It's been 8 years, I reckon. And, yeah, no, like, they've got the talent, and when they're on. It's just, yeah, so when Rankin's actually playing in the midfield, he's scary. He's, like, scary good. Delivering the ball inside forward 50, and that's probably because he knows how he'd like to receive it, and he also knows where good players will run to, and we'll just kick it to that space and let them run onto it. So in that sense, if they give him more opportunity in the middle, awesome, Rankin will be electric. But with the additions of guys like Pete Ling, Alex Neil-Bullen, and those sorts of guys that can rotate through the middle, I can see Rankin being only used in little spurts here and there, rather than as much as what he did actually get used last season. What are your thoughts?
Based on what he has said himself in preseason, he is wanting to play more midfield and primarily midfield. Throughout the practice matches, the match simulations, he has been playing midfield, barely any time but forward at all. If anything, the last couple, two or three, he's played no time but forward. But again, this is one of those scenarios where you have to split Adelaide in half, and it could just be because, you know, they're not trying to fit all these guys in one team, which is why he's playing predominantly midfield. You know, when it's an actual game, like a practice game, he's going to spend time up forward.
Yeah.
Look, it is tough, especially when you have brought in, you know, guys like Neil-Bullen and Pete Ling as well. And I think Pete Ling is going to be mostly a CBA midfielder. And that pushes Dawson out to a wing more often, which means that, yeah, but Crouch, a lot of people don't think Crouch is going to get a lot of games, but he's been training really strong, and I think he is. So when you've got guys like Pete Ling and Crouch, and Rankin could be the third guy, definitely, but there's something that bothers me, and that's he's great when he's playing, but it's when he's playing. So he had a really good six-game run, right, between rounds 5 and 10. Okay. And then he got injured, came back, played well, had a bye, played a couple of decent games, got himself suspended, came back, played pretty badly. And then I think he got injured again to finish off the year. So he's just never really strung together a full season. And that's the thing that concerns me a little bit. And now he's playing more midfield. Does that mean there's more pressure on his body? I just see more red flags here than. I just see more red flags here. And when you've got someone like Horn Francis, who's about a similar price, slightly more expensive, yeah. You've got the DPP, he doesn't have an injury history. He can score well when he's playing forward too. So he's unlikely to just disappear from games. Rankin's pretty good when he plays forward as well, of course. I just see that Horn Francis is probably a better pick right now than what Rankin is. I can see me having Rankin throughout the season, definitely. But I, as a starter, if I had to pick between the two, I'm picking Horn Francis. And also, I was one of the idiots that started Rankin, watched him play forward after all preseason playing as a CBA midfielder, right, in the scratch matches. I thought, yeah, I've got this POD. He's going to be awesome, right? played the first month, the first four games, he didn't see a CBA bounce. And then I trade him out because he didn't have the role and he goes 121 in round five. Of course he freaking did. And then he was midfielder for the rest of the year. But anyway, so I don't think I can do it again because this is exactly what we saw last preseason and what's stopping him from being a half forward when the season actually kicks off. So I think you can get away with fading him.
Yeah, I remember that too. You were filthy.
I was filthy all season. I'm still filthy about it.
Oh, shit. Anyway. We'll move on to the last of our four primos that we're going to discuss, and that is the Peter's absolute favorite of them all, sarcasm, Luke Jackson at 509K DPP with ruck. So, yeah, he's got that ruck swing. He only had the 600-plus scores in 23 games, so it doesn't really scream pick me. And I think they came early in the season too when Shrek was out. So, yeah, and we've also, again, got the big Shrek out for, we don't know how long the start of the season. All we've been told is that he misses the start of the season. So people could get sucked in, start Luke Jackson early. He pumps out a 170 and a 150. Fuck yeah. You're ahead of the game. And then Shrek comes back and then he drops off and plays like a peanut again. So that's my view. If you end up starting everyone right and you start him, Shrek comes back one game and he's shit. You can always trade him but that's only in an ideal world where you've nailed all your rookies, you've nailed all of your primos, there's no injuries and shit like that. That's the way I view it. I personally won't be starting Luke Jackson because, again, there's value better used elsewhere. What are your thoughts, Pete?
So you said primo and then you said Luke Jackson, so I'm still confused. I'm not sold on him at all. He's unproven in terms of consistency. He's proven to have a big ceiling. You know, 178 in round two against North and 154 against the Saints in round 10. But you take those two games out and his average is pretty shit this season.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, those two games really overinflate just how average he was. Like, immediately after the 154, he went 67, for example. Okay. Immediately after a 115, he goes 66 and 72. It's just not great. And then those were games that Shrek missed. And apart from this setback that he's got on his ankle, which has got nothing to do with the injury that was hampering him last season, right? Apart from that injury that he has on his ankle, where he was getting a screw removed and he should be good to, they're still saying early in the year, he could be back round two. He could play round two, right?
Yeah.
He was on fire. He was destroying Luke Jackson in match simulation, in the match simulation training and drills. He is lost a lot of weight. He's looking good. So apart from this screw removal, he's looking great. He is their number one ruckman by a country mile. And I'm not picking Jackson because of that. Yeah, the DPP swing is, yes, it's useful. I totally understand. If you want that swing, I get it. But with the flex position, you could have your DPP pick as the R3. You could pick another ruckman in flex and then in theory just use the R3 as your loop as well as your flexibility. So if your ruckman goes down for a week or two, you can move your flex ruckman into the so you could switch R3 midfield forward. So it's going to be a ruck forward, your loop. You move him to the flex. You move your flex ruckman to your R3, you switch out your injured ruckman, and then that flex position, which has now got your loop, you switch him out with a forward. And you've kind of got that line covered with a third ruckman. So I don't think we need Luke Jackson anymore like we did last year.
In theory, yeah, but remember, flex can only go switch to a bench position of the same type. So if you've got a ruck, if you've got a donut ruck flex, you can't switch him with someone in your forward line.
No, but that's why if you do a rookie that's mid, like a Sims, right? Rookie that's ruck like forward. Ruck
forward.
Yes, yeah, it has to be sense. Ruck forward or it doesn't work. So yep, you have correct. To. So your loop player has to be a ruck forward in that instance. And I'm saying Sims because Richmond plays Sundays a lot this season, right? Or you can go Archer Reed, for example, too, who probably should play for West Coast at some point this year. So therefore, you can actually have that. And you're probably going to have better scores from a third primo ruckman than a Luke Jackson who's not really a primo.
Yeah, Agreed. We'll move on to our mid-pricer slash PODs. Now, these ones that we're discussing, we might not necessarily be picking in our own sides, but they're ones to keep an eye on because they could break out. They could have a role change. They could get more mid minutes, that sort of thing. They might have even changed clubs. They might have changed clubs getting more midfield minutes and a role change. Who knows? So we're going to discuss a fair few left fielders here because we're the Supercoach co-captains. We don't just do your fucking vanilla ones that everyone else does. So the first one that we're going to start off with is the most biased one on this sheet, and that's Brent Daniels from the Giants at 485K. So the reason why I want to talk about Binger is about his preseason and also about the last five games of last year. So his last five games, usually when I look at players, I look at last five games of the season to see if they've had a role change or whatnot and whether they're going to break out potentially the next year. So his last five games, he had two scores over 130, and the biggest score was a 195, and that's when he was rotating through the midfield in spurts. He was doing this, that, and whatever, and Kingsley's kind of figured, holy shit, this dude, when his hammies hold up, is actually really good at putting into the middle and feeding it to the guys in the forward line. And yeah, he had that five-game average of 119, albeit like inflated by those two massive scores. But still, I personally want to see how his preseason goes. At the moment, he's getting a little bit of word about getting some midfield action. But there's another guy that's been in that midfield action a lot more than him. And it might be them preserving Binger because, let's face it, the dude's had so many hamstring injuries over the years and this is his first healthy preseason. They might not want to push it. But yeah, that the practice game, when they have that practice game or even the practice game that's not televised and then the actual one, I want to actually see what his role is there. And if it is good, I might be swayed to actually pick the prick. Anyway, Pete, what's your thoughts?
Look, I like a POD. I like a player that you are thinking he's going to have a decent role. He should score well enough and then pump out some big, you know, like a 195 against Freo in round 23 is pretty messed up. Like that's a big game, yeah. Right? You know, he does that round one, like you've done well. Okay. But also I think that he's pretty much a cheaper more in the sense that his floor games, I'm looking for, is a 52 against Richmond, which surprises me because the Giants, I'm pretty sure, smashed Richmond. So I don't know. I don't personally love this pick, but I do like it as maybe as a luxury, you know, let's just say our forward lines are not what we think they are this year. You know, maybe we cop some injuries, you know, and our forward lines start to look pretty average. It'd be a pretty decent POD pick to round out your forward line as your last upgrade because I guarantee you his ownership will be low. But I don't like starting him because there's other players that I think are significantly cheaper who have a role kind of guaranteed, yes, while he's still a little bit up, his role's up in the air. I don't hate it. I definitely don't hate it, but he does a really shitty buy as well.
Yeah, the buyer's shithouse. And the other, and the player that I'm talking about that has been taking a lot of those midfield minutes in match simulation at the moment is Harvey Thomas, who we'll just touch on a little bit later. And that's the concern because they're both small. They both have very good footy IQs. And yeah, they might want Brent Daniels to play more up forward. So that's why I was like, it's a more of a wait and see with that one. Now,
Harvey Thomas, he's cheaper. So if you're going to take that risk, I would rather do it on the cheaper guy that you could just, let's just say he shits the bed and it's not a good pick. You just trade him down to a rookie that's on fire, yeah, that's correct, on his bubble, right? But Brett Daniels, like, he's at that awkward price where you're probably not going to trade him down to anything great. If you do, you can still go to the rookie, but then you're going to have like a surplus funds and then you're going to try to upgrade to someone else and you might not quite get there. I just think that it's just more annoying from Brett Daniels than it is a Harvey.
No, that's fair enough. But if he strikes gold early and you're on him, you can let us know about it.
I already know you're not gonna pick him. He's gonna score he's gonna pump out a 150 come round one, and then I'm gonna get a message from you and my bad. Sorry.
Oh, it happens to me every year, mate. Don't stress. Every year I talk someone up in the preseason and I have him in my team and then I leave him out. and it might be like a weirdly priced rookie that no one's talking about. The Jack Buckley one that happened when Jack Buckley came on. Fuck, that killed me. But anyway, we'll move on from that.
I actually listened to you on that one. I picked him and I loved it.
I was like, fuck me, dead. I should have listened to myself. Anyway, the next one. This is a guy that's been in and out of my team. And that's Liam Baker at 444K. He's got DPP with mid status. So he's had the change of club. He's gone from Richmond to West Coast. When I wrote this run sheet out, Pete, I said potential halfback role. But since then, we've been notified that, yeah, he has been in match simulation since he's rolled his ankle at the halfback role. I don't know if he's taking the kick-ins. You can let me know that in a minute. But I feel like at West Coast, he's not going to be like that Mr. Fix-It guy that he was at Richmond, where he played every fucking role under the sun except for ruck because he's too much of a midget. So I pretty much said wait and see for the practice games. But from all your accounts, he's playing that halfback role. Is he getting the kick-ins?
So from what I've been told, his kick-in, he did have a couple, but he wasn't the main. He wasn't necessarily – it was shared. So it was shared. Okay. That's what I was told again. But it's one of those things where they split the team into two lots, right? And they're testing things. Yeah. On an actual practice match, if he's got the bulk kick-ins, I think you have to pick it because it's just 3 points. But he did take a few from what I was told. Again, these are spectators watching, right? So they didn't count them. So I don't know the exact percentage, but I do know that he did take some. He did play across the half back line and he was best on ground by far, apparently. Yeah. Looking good. He's looking great. We know that he's the kind of guy that can score well. My only concern is that at Richmond, which was Mini's, first real senior gig when Damien Hardwick left, right, in 2023, he actually did okay, Liam Baker. So his first two games under McWalter were 104 and 103. It's not bad. But then he pumped out 360s and a 50 before going 104, 81, 101. So, look, the role is similar. So he did have a role that was similar to what we're thinking he's going to have at West Coast in those games, but he did get moved around a little bit. So he did obviously play forward. He was the Mr. Fix-It at Richmond. I'm just hoping that McWalter doesn't start him at halfback and then they cop a few injuries and then he's used as a plug somewhere else, because it looks like that's what happened at Richmond in that second half of 2023 when Richmond started to win games as well. But then I suppose the Tigers did have Jaden Short and Daniel Rioli, while the Eagles don't really have guys like that. So it's definitely one to watch. Now, Baker being 100K cheaper or 90K cheaper than Horn Francis has really tempted me. So this is why I'm thinking you could, if you were to fade Horn Francis hypothetically and you were to go a Liam Baker, and Liam Baker has that halfback role and he's killing it and he's got bulk kick-ins and he's just on fire, you could see Liam Baker gain 150K quite quickly, right?
Yeah.
I can't see Horn Francis gaining 150K. That would make him 680K, which is the same price as Bolton Pelly right now. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that you could be forced to pay 150K more for a Liam Baker if he's got that role, right? But you're probably not going to pay 150K more for Horn Francis. You might pay 50K more if Horn Francis goes off. So it's kind of like if you fade Horn Francis and you go Baker, you can get Horn Francis and you're 100K better off in the long run. Does that make sense? This is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This is why I'm thinking Baker.
The reason why I'm leaning more towards Baker is it's like the Dano vibe. I get the sense that Baker's going to turn out to be someone like a Dane Zorko in defense. And I want to be there for that fucking ride, especially at 444K.
And that money can be used elsewhere very easily.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I don't know how much his ownership is right now, actually, Baker. I'm going to do a quick look.
It's not high. Last time I checked, it's not high. Forward line, ownership.
This is what happens when you record live.
It's low. Why is it so low? Hang on. Where is he?
Yeah, I'm not getting a
good... I'm scrolling. I'm still scrolling.
I'm going to
It
actually...
is at 3%.
Yeah, ultra POD territory. And I can... This is... And the other side of it is, remember when we were like, oh, yeah, Gordon's going to have a breakout year. And then, like, his ownership was low. And I swear Paddo said in the preseason of that year, he's like, oh, watch him fucking pop off in preseason and everyone will have him. And then he had, like, a 170 or something in preseason. And then everyone fucking had the dude.
Yeah.
The same thing will happen with Liam Baker.
I kind of hope
he just gets like a 95 or 100.
Yeah.
And just like then calm down.
He might jump to a, if he does that, he's probably only going to jump to a 10% ownership. Like, he's got the same ownership as Taj Houghton, who's injured and not going to play. No, I
know. Makes no sense. Anyway. We'll move on to another midget, and that is Grian Myers at 441K. Now, you're probably thinking, Dano, what the fuck, man? Like, Myers hasn't averaged more than 81.9 Supercoach, which was only in 2024. But basically, from my reports and articles and whatnot, he's looking to push up the ground a little bit more in stoppages and that sort of thing. And whenever I've seen stuff like that happen, I usually see a little boost in scoring. Now, how much of a boost, I don't know, but it'll be more than an 81.9 Supercoach average. Now, again, 441K. Yeah, it's a little bit awkward. Myers loves a goal assist, we all know. Fun fact for you all, actually, if you've not listened to this podcast or whatnot, whenever I watch a Geelong game grind, Myers scores at least 2 goals. I don't watch Geelong games too often, but when I do, that little prick pops up for 2+. So Geelong fans will probably want me to watch every single fucking Geelong game this year after hearing that. But Geelong are fucking shit and we hate them. So I won't be doing that too often. But yeah, if you ever... Multi-wise, if you know that a Giants are playing GWS, you know I'm watching. Chuck a multi on. Gamble responsibly. But yeah, I think this might be a new avenue for Myers to actually get an uptick in his scoring. But again, it's a watch the preseason, practice games closely. It could end up being one that you consider in a draft league, more so than Supercoach. And I know we don't like talking about draft too much. But yeah, I just wanted to mention the bloke just in case he does pop off early and I'm like, haha, I told you so. Anyway, Peter, what are your thoughts?
I don't hate it for draft. You know, his first 10 games, he ended up finishing on 93.8, which is actually a decent average. But then he kind of really fell off, like really fell off. His ceiling is decent. It's a 125 against the Blues last year. It's pretty good, but... Then he scores a 37 against the Tigers and a 32 against the Dogs. I don't know. Having a 32 against, 32 on my side for someone that's played a full game, by the way, so it's not an injury-affected game.
Yeah.
And then you've paid 441K. It's just gross. I don't. And then I got to watch more Geelong games as well because I've got a player in there that I want. So I don't love this. He's similar price to Baker. I think there's more upside to Baker.
Yeah, agreed. The next one, another former Tiger is Shea Bolton, 416K DPP with midfield status. And we're going to talk about a lot of new team bunch players here. So personally, he looked so fucking disinterested last season. So hopefully the change to Freo is going to be good. Best season was 96.7, and that was 2023. So don't know if he's going to get as many CBAs as what that was that year at Freo, but I'd be honestly looking at Pracky games with this bloke, honestly. But again, Peter, you're probably the best one to talk about this. Watching him in a game, I never actually understood how many fucking times he peppers at the goal just for no fucking reason and doesn't take like a short chip to someone who's in a better position. Like, when he pulls off the goals, he looks fucking sick, but I reckon he probably misses about 80% of them.
As a Tigers fan, I loved and hated him because he is incredibly skillful. He's explosive. He can do things that other players just cannot do. So he could have been our best player when he was on. The only issue is that he never strung together a full season of just being on. I mean, 2021, I think he... 21 or 22 where he won an All-Australian. It was one of those years. And he was pretty great. There was about a four-year period where he was coming top three in the best and fairest for a reason. I can clearly see that I reckon he made the decision to leave Richmond in round 6 during our bye because he went 119, 133, 129 and then just didn't turn up for the rest of the year. With CBAs, I can see it, definitely. But from the match simulations, I've seen 4 or 5 match simulations where, you know, I've had 4 or 5 match simulation data be sent to me, and he's only really attended CBAs on one of those. That is concerning for me. And especially when you've got guys like Neil Erasmus, who's trying to break into that team, and we're all hoping that he does so we can pick him, right, as a rookie. I just can't see him getting a lot of midfield time just yet, which means he's probably priced at the appropriate price. He can go big, definitely, but he needs to be getting proper midfield time to do it. And if he is, like, I actually think that he scores better as a forward. But the annoying thing is he has 5 shots at goal and he'll kick it. He'll be right in front, like directly in front. And this is the most infuriating thing watching him as a Richmond fan. Instead of just kicking it like a normal AFL player, he tries to make it look cool and you'll kick it over his shoulder and then you'll miss it from 5 meters out. And the amount of times I've seen that happen is insane. That's really bad for your Supercoach scoring. So I don't know. I'm not sold on the pick purely because we don't have a guarantee on his role. And I like him better than Myers or Dylan Moore, but he's also cheaper than them. So
yeah,
it's a no for me though.
Well, the first of the 2 biggest locks of the forward line we're about to discuss, we're discussing them back to back, and that's Jack McRae, 392K. Again, new club. Looks like he's back in the CBA action. Fuck you, Bevo. He's in amongst it at all of St Kilda's practices, getting a bunch of the pill, assisting the midfield brigade. What's his name? The former Giant, who's the captain there. What's his fucking name again? Jesus Christ.
Steel. Tom.
Yeah, Jack Steele. He's fucking loving life right now. He's actually got help.
The Giants.
Yeah. I didn't want him to go.
That's fair. I understand.
He couldn't crack the midfield. Oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway, he's getting some help, which is going to be awesome. And it's actually crazy to think back that just in 2022, he averaged 115.2 Supercoach. And even in 2023, when his role actually started to change towards the last third or half of the season, he actually still managed a 99.9 Supercoach. So he's listed as a sole forward, biggest fucking lock in Supercoach for 2025. Hit like he'll crack 100 easy. Even if he averages high 90s, you still win. And there's too much upside for this. What are your thoughts?
He's in my team. When he plays midfield, there was in that 2023 season when his role kind of switched and he was playing between forward and midfield, he had a couple of games where he went back-to-back 145s. And I think he played midfield those games. He had a month period where he went 145, 145, 108, 120. And then I think he was switched back to the forward line after that.
Yeah.
It's just, and look, this is why Jack McRae, we're going to talk about the other two very soon, but this is why these 3 doggies that we're going to be talking about left. They weren't playing in their rightful positions. They weren't playing in the roles that they actually do best in. Jack McRae has won, I can't believe he's only in 61% of teams right now. He has won best and fairest, all Australians. He's not that old. He's only 30. You know, he went back to the VFL and absolutely pumped the guys in the VFL. He is way better than a VFL player. And then he comes in and he's the sub and then he's stuck in a forward pocket. I just don't get it. He's just not that kind of player. And the Dogs weren't doing that well anyway. I think that, you know, Dogs fans are going to watch Jack McRae rack up 30 disposals most games this year, and it's going to be benefiting us. You know, we've got him as a forward only. That's fantastic for us. And then also the Saints have a few midfield injuries. You know, Philippou's injured. They've got a lot of those. Sinclair's injured at the moment as well. So Jack McRae's getting all of the CBAs. Mm-hmm. Probably he's probably number 2 behind Jack Steele. So in that role, you just got to pick the guy.
Yep. You know what? We're going to quickly jump to the bloke that I actually left off the run sheet, even though he's a lot cheaper. You spoke about former doggies. The reason why I left him off the run sheet is because I just assumed everyone would pick him, and that's Caleb Daniel at 269K. Same deal. Freaking Bevo, fuck you. But in when Bevo has dogged the boys, he's given us some real good Supercoach options. And unfortunately, everyone's Supercoach forward lines are going to look fucking eerily similar because there's just too much value. Caleb Daniel taking that halfback flank role in a team where the halfback flank role at North Melbourne is just a massive seagull role is so good. And Colby McKercher doesn't even look to be in that halfback role cemented. He's more midfield switching to halfback and whatnot. And Caleb Daniel's just living down there, and they know he's such an elite little kick with the kick-ins and whatnot that I can guarantee that he'll end up be taking the bulk of the kick-ins too. So I left him off the list because I just assumed everyone's going to pick him. But Pete, do you want to quickly talk on him before we get back into the rest of the run sheet?
I think there are 31% of the competition don't own Caleb Daniel. And I don't understand how that is that high. I honestly thought this guy would have, I genuinely thought this guy would have like a 99% ownership. As the season, you know, starts, I think after a couple of practice matches, we're definitely going to see Caleb Daniel's ownership increase further. I can't see it being that low. This guy, look, what annoys me the most is that I thought we were going to get Caleb Daniel under 200K. But then Bevo decided to play him in an actual position that he does well in for the final two games. I actually think that he's just, I think he does it on purpose to Supercoach players. I really think he does. I think he just doesn't like the game because he went 97 and 107 in his final two games. And I think it was the only two games he actually played in his rightful position. He was just, yeah, he was just dogged all year. And he played I didn't do that on purpose. That was an accidental pun. he was just dogged all year, and now he's got that role. There's not been one match simulation where he hasn't had that role. He's their main distributor. They're looking for him every time leaving that back line. He has had kickouts. He will probably have bulk kickouts, we hope. We'll have to wait and see. In your forward line, this is Jack Zeeple 2.0. Just pick him. Don't even think about it. At 269K, just pick the guy. And if he doesn't go right, oh, well, you know what? Yeah. Because I can see that ownership getting into the 80s and 90s before the season goes off. Because
it'd be too risky to fade.
Way too risky to fade. Way too risky to fade. And at that price, just get him. Biggest lock. Biggest lock.
Yeah. The other big lock is Bailey Smith at 389K, a DPP with midfield. Baz Lenker's back, had the year off, in the hoops. Fucking Battle of the Pound will be interesting between the Dogs and the Cats. Basically, they're going to utilize him in the guts. The interesting thing is Western Bulldogs usually utilized him as an outside runner and then occasionally rotated him into the CBAs and whatnot. So the fact that the Geelong are actually going to be like, nah, he's just permanently in the guts. They're going to use him as an inside-outside kind of dual runner. That just fucking lock him in. Like if he cracks 100 average, you're laughing. Like the man's only 389K. He's going to be, honestly, by the end of the season, top six forward.
I can't see a world where he's not a top six forward unless he gets injured personally.
Yeah.
I just want to point out that there was a point in time where I was there was a season, 2022. Bailey Smith and Bontempelli were made forward eligible on the same week. And I was tossing up between which one to pick. There was a point in time where we were genuinely thinking about who to bring in. Would I bring in Bailey Smith or will I bring in Marcus Bontempelli? Which sounds ridiculous like 2 years later. But that's how good he was when he was playing in a role that suited him and he was on fire. He was averaging 112.2 by round 10, 2022. He started the season off with a 139, then an 80, not that great, but then 122, 135, 80, 95, 98. Not bad for a forward eligible player, but you know, not incredible numbers, but then 144, 117.
Yep.
Right? Like this is a guy that can produce really good numbers. And for those who have been paying attention to Bailey Smith, know that by round 10, 2022, people were calling him out for All Australian. He was on fire. Those first 10 games, he was one of their best players. He was fantastic. And then there were some injury issues and he didn't really get his body right. And then 20, You know, we thought he was going to have a big 2023, and then he just wasn't played in the right role. And then 2024 happened, and he was injured. And now he's left. So this is why we get Bailey Smith at 389K, and he's the second most owned player in the competition at the moment for a reason. And that's because people apparently remember his 2022 form. And if he gets anywhere near that, we've done very well.
Yeah, agreed. Big, big ass lock. Now, this next bloke is one that I'm not sure if he's a lock or not. And it's mainly due to having so many fucking kangaroos in my team at the moment. And that's Luke Parker. 344K DPP with midfield status. Had the change of club from the Swans to the Roos. Now, with George Wardlaw out, the window is open, and from what we've seen, Luke Parker's getting so many CBAs and whatnot. And then you realize, who's his fucking coach? It's Clarko. What does Clarko want in a young midfield? Fucking premiership experience and leadership. Who else fucking has that other than Luke Parker in that side? Fuck all. So straight away, my mind's like, right, okay, Luke Parker of old might be coming out. Yeah, and he can rest up forward. We know the dude can kick a snag. He is getting on in age, but just remember last season, we're all going, fuck, we need to get Dane Zorko in, that 35-year-old fucker. Parker's not obviously 35, but he's in his 30s. So to me, I'm like, fuck yeah, Luke Parker at 344K, DPP midfield, oh yeah, that's a solid pick. And then I look at my team, and I'm going into other lines here. I've got fucking Caleb Daniel in the forward line. I've got Tristan Cherry in the fucking ruck. Then I look up a little bit further. I've got Harry Sheasel in defense. I'm like, oh my God, my buys are going to be fucked. So this is where you actually need to kind of think of your buy structure and go, right, how many kangaroos are too many? And then the second side of it is it going to fuck my buy structure? Or third, you could just do a Dano last year and go, what the fuck's a buy structure? Just pick who's the best available and worry about it later. Pete, what are your thoughts?
His ownership has trickled up a lot in the last few days, actually, because when I put him in my team about a week ago, he was at below 10% ownership, and now he's at 23%, which is the ninth most owned forward.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I don't know. I'm thinking Nat Fyfe 2.0 here. Last year, we thought Nat Fyfe had that role, right? Worst case, he rests forward and he kicks goals, right? He's got CBAs. You know, this is a dual Brownlow medalist. Yeah, he's playing midfield. Okay. I don't know. It's just got Nat Fyfe all over it again. And I don't know what it is. He's in my team currently. Okay. And you've just, you know, you've rattled out all four North Melbourne players that I have at my side. So I've got the same issue. And he's currently sitting at my flex position because I get to cover two lines. But there's just a part of me that's like, am I really going to put a 31-year-old that just averaged 70 in my team? I don't know what it is. There's just a part of me that...
He's not 31.
Is he 32?
He's turning 33, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, no. I made it worse. I don't know. It's just... I think AFL-wise, he's going to do good for North Melbourne. It's just whether or not that reciprocates to, you know, Supercoach. Like, if he goes 19th for the year, yeah, all right, you've done well. Like, you've paid less money for him, but he's also not that great if he's gone 90 either. You kind of want him to be closer to the 100 mark to really make it a successful pick.
Yeah.
And he is their third, you know, fourth preferred midfielder right now, right? So he's behind Sheasel and LDU, and arguably he's behind Powell at the moment. So when Wardlaw comes back, does he go back to fifth? Because Wardlaw's not playing forward line. So I don't know. I'm actually talking myself out of this pick the more I speak.
Yeah.
Currently,
I do not have him in my team, and it is mainly due to just having so many North Melbourne players. We will need to move on, though, because we've got a bit of a time limit, and I think we've gone over it, but we're going to keep trying. The last one in this bunch is my boy KFC, and that's Riley Sanders, aka Colonel Sanders, at 339K, DPP mid/forward. So there's news that came out that Treloar's out for an extended period of time, and then you factor in the, along with the departure of Jack McRae, and then... Actually, I'll talk about my little theory in a minute. So you got those two right there. this could see Sanders' midfield minutes upticked and whatnot. And then I personally think that this season, and you can fucking quote me on this later if I'm wrong, fair enough. This season, I think that Bevo will do to Libba what he did to McRae, and that is slowly phase him out of that midfield role. And Libba will have a massive dip this year and start like playing fucking half forward flank or some shit like that. And Sanders will be put into that midfield role a lot more. He's been excelling in preseason. I think he just did a pracky match where he just kicked three snags from the midfield, Pete. Mm-hmm. And full preseason, it's the draft classes of the last 5 years, right? Or even six. There's always like two players that come out in their second year and they just fucking go for it. And honestly, Sanders last year, I reckon, could have been priced at like a primo this year if he had have gotten all those midfield minutes, played every game and whatnot like Sheasel did in his first year. I reckon if we saw Sanders the way he can play last year, we'd all be picking him in our forward lines right now. But honestly, blessing in disguise again by Bevo, 339K. This bloke is currently my flex at the moment and he's going to live there until I see otherwise in preseason. What are your thoughts, Pete?
I understand. I think that he's an up-and-coming player. He's very talented. And when given the right role, he could be that amazing player. Okay? And he probably should have been and could have been the rising star winner had he have not played VFL and been subbed every week. However, you said three times in the magic word, and that is Bevo. And I can't pick him anymore. I just can't do it. Unless your name's Marcus Bontempelli, right? I don't think I could pick him. It's a no for me. Sorry, but no, I can't do it. I need to see it.
Honestly, I think the hand has been forced with Treloar, personally. But yeah, I'm going to stick with him. He's going to be my breakout contender this year, Riley Sanders. We've seen what he can do last year when he played midfield, fucking in the preseason. Oh my God, he got like 30 something disposals in his first game, and everyone's like, holy shit. And then Bevo dogged us. But I think this is the year. Anyway, move on to some honorable mentions. So I mentioned Harvey Thomas earlier. He's 281K mid/forward. I just wanted to mention him because he has actually been playing in the midfield role that Bedford would normally play. Now, I actually don't know if the Giants are kind of going, Harvey Thomas is actually doing a better role than Bedford is in that kind of midfield taggy role. He's young and he's got an endurance tank. The only reason why they picked Bedford in the first place was because of his tank, and they needed to like find him a role because he wasn't kicking goals. So whereas Harvey Thomas can actually then rest forward and kick goals, and the kid's a fucking genius. So the baby-faced assassin there, I've got him as an honourable mention. The other two I have, Pete, Sam Wicks at 242K. Now, fuck all has been reported on this prick. And from what I've been told, and this again could be an A versus B type situation, he's actually been training off halfback flank. Now, if it comes out in those practice matches that he's playing halfback flank and whatnot, I think he will slip under the radar. Because it's Sam Wicks. He's not like a fallen primo or anything like that. And he might pump out like a 110 if he's playing off that halfback. And again, no one I reckon will pick him, or maybe a couple of people will. And it won't surprise me if he does well off that halfback flank line. But no one's been reporting on it. I've just heard some whispers about it. So I'm keen to have a look and see with him because he's 242K. And the other one is a bloke that we've both discussed with each other, Pete, and that's Jack Hutchinson. From West Coast, just a forward only, 234K. With Yeo being out, it's been discussed that Hutchinson's potentially going to be in that midfield role, and he's a big boy. And as we know, AFL clubs love those big-ass boys that are your Patrick Cripps size. So you got Tom Green at the Giants, Smilly, who you're fucking excited about, Pete, at Richmond is basically a Paddy Cripps clone. So everyone's realizing, holy fuck, we actually need like that one big bodied midfielder who's basically a fucking key forward height that can run around the ground. And Hutchinson fits that bill as well. So I just wanted to mention him just in case he does play that role. He's one to consider considering he is only 234K. Is there anyone that you want to have an honourable mention to, Pete, or discuss those guys quickly a little bit more?
Out of the three that you've mentioned, Hutchinson, I think, is the one that is the most tantalizing. He's the cheapest. He also did win, help me win. He actually won me. He was the difference. My work league grand final in Classic. So thank you, Jack Hutchinson. Isaac Heaney was a late out. I had Jack Hutchinson's 102 in the final game of the year on the bench, and my opponent had no one in the emergency. So thank you, Jack Hutchinson. But that 102 came in a game that he played as an inside midfielder, and he went up forward and kicked a goal as well. Very talented player, actually, I think. He was playing every match simulation on the wing until the Yo injury, and then he started playing as an inside midfielder. The last match simulation, he played inside midfield all day. Now, and that was a game where Yo's injured. They had, who's that other midfield injury that they had? Was it Sheed?
Dom Sheed's out for the whole season.
He's out for the year, and then they had Harley Reid not playing as well, right? So if he's got that role when Harley Reid comes back in, then I like it. I'm actually very tempted by him. I'm keeping a very close eye on him. I actually wrote an article about him about a month ago saying that he is the guy that you pick in your draft pick as your last pick and that no one's looking at. I'm actually now tempted to pick him in Classic. Myself, personally, I think that he'd be pretty good. He'll get DPP by round 6 as well, by the way.
Yeah. Now, we've run out of time to discuss the rookies, so we'll do that in another podcast, but we do have a fair few forward rookies to nut out as well. Some popular ones, some that people aren't even considering, and some that are popular that maybe they shouldn't be. So we'll discuss that next time. But Pete, what's your X handle, your fucking YouTube and all that sort of shit for the listeners so then they can start following you if they don't already?
It is Nerds for Life SC, which is the Nerds 4 Life SC. That's basically for all of it, for YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, X, Instagram, all of those. I post them pretty much everywhere, so you can follow me there. I just want to mention Tom Lynch is an absolute lock.
Oh, disgusting. Disgusting. Anyway, because we don't have any paddo, Pete, we're going to do the sign off with you. And you, I know you listen to us, so we're going to try this on the very first attempt. So here we go.
Let's go.
So from us at the Supercoach Co-Captains, I'm Dano.
And I'm Pete.
And this is us signing
the fuck off.
Fuck Tom Lynch and fuck Bevo.
That was fun. Hey.